Welcome to the Natural Running Network. We are brought to you by Mio, makers of the world's first strapless heart rate monitor sports watches, and MedHab, makers of RPM Squared, an innovative system of gait analysis that slips right into your running shoes. My name is Richard Diaz. I am your host. Are you a runner? Do you love to get out and challenge yourself? Running your first marathon, or maybe caught the bug of obstacle racing? Well, sit tight, because this is a show you just don't want to miss. All right, so today we're going to talk about changing running form to reduce injury and improve performance. And whether or not you want to believe that there's a potential for you to make these changes, I think you're going to find by listening to this show that it's going to give you some pause to think about it. I'm going to bring on a friend of mine, a physical therapist by the name of Peter Folletto, who is an expert in gait correction. And anyway, let's just go and get Peter on a live mic, and then we'll just go from there. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm doing well. Say hello to our audience.
Well, hello, audience. What did I hear the other day? 40,000 downloads plus a month. That's quite an audience.
Well, you know, it ebbs and flows, but we have seen quite a few people that have visited us. You know, not necessarily live, but at one time or another, they check us out. So you're going to get famous, dude.
Well, if we can just help a few more people, that would be great. I don't know so much about the fame, but obviously there's some great things we've been doing for years. And
I tell you what, I kind of like shied away from talking about it, but this is something I've been messing around with for a little while, and I've been sitting on my hands and not talking about it. But this company, MedHab, is producing these insoles. They're called RPM Square. If anybody goes to their website, they're going to see and learn more about them. But these things give back feedback to you via your iPhone to let you know what's going on while you're running, where you're putting load in your feet. So, you know, those people that are trying to get away from landing on their heels, it's going to indicate to them whether they're doing it or not, where they're putting the load. It'll measure their stride frequency. It'll measure power. It also crosses over for triathlon and cycling, so you could see how much work you're putting into each foot, where you're putting the load in your feet. It measures your cadence. Just amazing stuff. And what's really cool for guys like you and I is that, for example, if you were to prescribe a pair of these to one of your clients, when they upload this data, you get the email and you'll get a PDF file that indicates all the imagery of where the loading was, and what, you know, all the stats come right to you.
That's awesome. You know, I know a number of cyclists that are using power meters, and that sort of information has helped them become much more efficient.
Well, I also fit people. I'm a bike fitter. And during the course of a bike fit, what you can do is if you put somebody on the bike and let them pedal for 5 minutes, it's going to show you where they're loading the pedals. So we do a lot of shimming to, correct varus valgus action on the pedal. And it's going to tell you whether or not there's a need for a shim or not. I mean, it's just really powerful stuff. So, and these aren't cheap, incidentally. These things are valuable tools, and they're no joke. Yeah, let's start with this, okay? The first thing, I guess I'll just ask you, let's back up. Before we start getting into this, tell the audience a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm a physical therapist going on 24 years now. I've been in the healthcare field for a bit longer than that. Have been specializing in performance enhancement and spinal symmetry for about the last 15 years. And used to work for a company that made some pretty amazing equipment and went around the United States teaching and training and getting to listen to and learn from some of the best minds out there. And over time have kind of developed some methods that have proven highly effective for my clients and my athletes.
So now I think it's interesting to note, well, how we met, and you know, maybe you can give a little backstory on what our I won't call it a relationship, but I guess
sure
the similarities in our offerings and what we do.
Oh, absolutely. So the company I used to work for was the first to bring vibration training into the United States and the first to manufacture. So by default, I probably have more experience with that than just about anybody. And I'm not challenging anyone. I know there are tons of very talented people, tons of people much smarter than myself. But in traveling the country and installing this equipment, moving around, you ended up getting my favorite unweighting unit that they have, and a phenomenal treadmill. I have the same one, but a slightly different unweighting unit. And the big part of what this company had done, that particular unit came about at the request of the then Seattle Supersonics. They had a player that wouldn't heal, and they came to my former boss and asked him to make a unit that would take weight off of his stress fracture so he could heal. Well, he healed in 2 weeks, and they were very, very happy with that result. So that resulted in a commercial production of this unit. And while I didn't get to do your installation or training, have always kind of followed what you've done. And for those people that haven't seen your page, BS Human Performance on Facebook, I would strongly encourage them to go look at some of the examples. After 15 years of doing this, it becomes somewhat commonplace for us, but to other people, it can be astonishing. And the biggest part of that is just looking at symmetries in the body, and you obviously understand better than most that if there's an asymmetry somewhere in your body, it's going to be reflected in your gait and your running style. And the more symmetrical you can become, the more efficient you become, the better off you're going to be overall.
Right. Okay. So here's the thing. And I deal with people in commonly, I'm assuming that this is the case for you as well, but the motivation for the clients that I meet for the most part is injury. You know, they're just yeah. very, very, very frustrated with the fact that when they're out doing what it is they do, they keep getting hurt. And the typical MO for most runners is they get to a place where the volume in their training gets to a level that their body is no longer capable of sustaining it, and they break down. And
well, that's,
from that,
that's the key point yeah, there. That the volume. Yeah, if you know, if somebody has a pebble in the sole of their shoe, they may stop to take it out. It's just annoying because they'll hear a click, click when they're on the road. But most of the time, runners, being the people that they are, they want to get their run done, so they keep running. Now, if right. you're to take that same rock or pebble and put it inside their sock, they're going to stop and take that out. So pain is usually a good motivator, and that's you're right. That's where I see a lot of my clients. They've gotten so far down the road that we need to correct them. And the beauty of unweighting is that by taking up to 100% of their body weight off, if need be, and that's rarely, if ever, the case, you can reduce the stress to nearly zero and work on neurologic input. So they're getting good feedback instead of bad feedback. I mean, much like these MedHab soles you told me about, I'm looking forward to seeing those. That's something I haven't gotten to play with personally. At your suggestion, I did get a Mio, and I've been playing with that and love it. That's a great tool, having had a couple of other different products out there. So.
Right. So getting back to the volume in the injury episode, it's like what happens is because they really don't know what to do other than to rest, they rest. So they'll take maybe a week off and then they'll go out and test the water to see whether they're, you know, able to get back to their running. And then they start to proceed back into their volume again. And hopefully they're, you know, if luck is with them, that they can get a little bit more volume in before they get hurt again. But they make peace with their injuries, and they come to very, very close relationship with when it comes about and what the barriers are before these injuries occur. So what I find really fascinating and spending a lot of energy on in the last 6 or 7 years is that people are starting to figure out now that it isn't just a function of the volume, but it's the way they approach the run that needs to change. And so there's two things going on here, and there's different levels. You know, we've already kind of tiptoed into the concept of unweighting and some of the modalities we use to help people change their gait. But the first line of defense is just kind of verbal cueing, teaching people what they should be trying to achieve while they run. And that has great effect, incidentally. I don't find myself going to the hole, so to speak, as often as I used to, because I can get really good inroads with people by just helping them to understand the mechanics of the way they should move, and by changing their mindset and getting them to do the drills and things that I show them, they can make big and dramatic changes in the way they move. Now, I had recently Dr. Nicholas Romanoff on the show, you know, who is the founder of the pose running, and essentially that's what he's been doing since the 70s, is helping people to make proper foot strike and, you know, understand the proper mechanics of movement while they're running, and it has huge implication. And so I don't know whether, Peter, do you spend any time with that kind of work in your place?
Oh, absolutely. I never understood people who didn't want a mirror in a gym. I just, unless you're going to videotape every encounter, I just don't see how you could work without that. So being able to show somebody, and there's so many different ways that people learn, and getting a feel for how your client best learns is definitely a big part of that. But verbal cueing and proper verbal cueing and the timing of the cueing, all of those things are just so important to get the most out of your client and their potential.
Right. Now, and then, so the holy grail of all of this, and the thing that you and I share, and it's really, you know, we talked about this yesterday. It's obscure. I mean, the work we do is pretty obscure. You see guys do a lot of different things when they're helping people to make changes in the way they move, but to physically alter someone's gait through this unweighting system and the strapping is extremely powerful. And I mean, you know, I'm not as close to it as you are, because it's funny, because I'm like, I'm in my own little think tank, and I don't step out of my box very often. My experience is really my experience. You know, I learn from doing, and every time I meet a new client and I learn something from them, and, you know, I try different techniques, and some better than others, some successful, some fail. But that's essentially how I've learned to really kind of manipulate and make these modifications to the people's gait. And, you know, as you've suggested earlier, you know, I've got some video clips out there of some very, very successful outcomes where we've literally changed the way people move, where it no longer becomes a function of coaching, but we physically get involved and change the way they move dynamically. And so I would love it if you could kind of do a better job explaining what this is all about, because I know you taught this for quite a length of time, right?
Oh, absolutely. Now almost 15 years that I've been using that particular product. And the wonderful thing about going around the U.S. and getting to teach is you learn from everybody that you end up instructing. And so they would come up with different ways to use these straps. And for your listeners, there is a very simple product that we have, and it's a piece of neoprene that goes around your ankle, just below your calf, and another piece that is just a piece of Kevlar string. And with most shoes, the insoles the way they are right now, that string will fit right inside your sole, so it's not impacting the ground. On the side, both sides of your feet, there are D-rings, plastic D-rings, with a piece of nylon attached to them that you can pull up, and there's a piece of Velcro on the other end and a stretchy part. And so we can pull your toes up, and if we don't do anything more than that, that's going to help to fire your hip flexors and get them moving. A number of runners, it's astounding to me, the number of people that come in that aren't firing their glutes. And there are a number of different drills we do or corrections. As you said, many, many times, just having a coach alongside you to point out some of the minor things that you don't see can make a huge difference. And these gait straps are relatively inexpensive, but in the wrong hands could possibly do more damage than good. And I think that's one of the reasons the company hasn't seen more success putting them out there. While almost anybody can use them, with a little bit of training, you're going to get much better results. I mean, I'm not going to go onto a football field and tell the coach I'm going to be a better football coach because I bought a whistle. But, you know, with so many trainers out there today and so many certifications, anybody can come along and hang up a shingle and talk a good talk for a while. But in the end, are your athletes staying healthy? Are your athletes performing? And is everybody happy with the end result? So that's kind of the direction that I think we've been working through all these years. And yeah, there's a certain degree of obscurity that happens. I'm astounded that more people don't train feet. When you look at runners, every step is an input. And if they're misaligned or asymmetrical, whatever term somebody chooses to use, every single step is bad input. One of my first athletes was a tremendous distance runner, but she ran like a duck. I mean, her form was horrid. And so we're able to get her corrected, and she went off to college and had a great career and is now a very successful author. Many of your listeners probably know her, but it was nice to be able to make those corrections so she could get to college. The problem is, you know, when a lot of the athletes leave, we see them get hurt, they come back, we make the corrections, they go back to school for a while and perform at a little bit higher level. But as you mentioned, it's all about volume. And with running, again, every step that's a bad input is going to result in a bad output. And when you're putting down thousands and thousands of bad inputs, until you get that correction, whether it's verbal or just using this gait strap to move your foot in or out or pull your toes up or any number of other ways that we use them, you know, it's just going to end up in ultimately patients coming back to us because they're hurt and they're working through with too much volume.
So what I used to see a lot of with heel strikers is that they, when they make contact, they're overstriding, they're landing on their heel. And in some cases they, you know, where the location of injury results is generally got to do with whether, as you suggested, they're in dorsiflexion, or whether they're having any bend at the knee at all or not. And if they don't have any bend at the knee, it generally translates to the hip. And then if they're making contact and they're everting, so in other words, as you like duck foot, if you're hitting with your toes splayed to the outside, under load, you know, you're virtually tossing yourself up in the air, landing on your heel. And if you're coming into the ground like a spear, your knee's locked out, you're translating that load right up into your hip. And then you're firing those stabilizer muscles in your glute and in your hips when you make that contact, because, you know, that's the response you get when you make that contact. And so what ends up happening is these piriformis muscles tend to get really, really locked up. And so they generally start experiencing all these hip problems. And so going back to the straps, what I would do in this case, aside from just changing their gait, getting them off their heels and getting them to make contact more under center of mass, I'll actually strap their thigh. You didn't talk about this, but, you know, those big sleeves that we put around their thigh, and then these big straps where we attach the strap to the vest that they're in as they're suspended over the treadmill. And so if people try to imagine you're wearing this vest, think of it like, you know, a water ski vest or something like this. And you're suspended. So we're lifting you up and reducing your load. So we may take some of the inhibition away from your body. So maybe 25, 30% of your body weight is taken away. And then we internally rotate your entire limb. So your leg is turned, it's like spun inward a little bit. And now as you're running, every step you take is changing the length relationship in the muscles that are stabilizing that hip. And then what I find is in a matter of five or six sessions of doing this type of work and guiding them and keeping them into a nice appropriate in level of pace and form, the problem goes away, and they can do this without any problems any longer. They're able to run naturally without having to think about it. And I know you've had these kind of experiences, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. And this carries across all genres. It doesn't matter what the sport is or what sort of problem you're dealing with. One of the things that I really enjoy is I might have, at my prior job, we had paraplegics walking next to very high-level athletes. And so we might be doing the exact same thing. And you were going on to the thigh straps and the vests. Again, I would refer people back to your website or Facebook page so they can see that in action. But if they can imagine this big, long strap, and so, for instance, if somebody was pigeon-toed or they turned their feet in quite a bit, we would start this strap coming down from the vest, going outside the leg and around their thigh, so it brings them into a more neutral position. And sometimes in just a matter of seconds, we'll see a great correction. One of the benefits that you have as well is the use of the vibration platform. And there are a number of manufacturers out there now. The problem is there's just so much variability between those. But the example I give with those is it takes people, say, depending on who you talk to, somewhere between 3,000 and 10,000 repetitions to pattern a new movement or an engram. Well, if we're doing 40 hertz on a vibration plate, that means that in a matter of minutes, we can completely change a movement pattern. And so if we do the unweighting of the correction there and then move somebody to a plate, I find that those fix or stabilize much quicker. So we're going to see a more long-term permanent response to the change. If we don't fix the problem, I'm sure as you've seen many times, you may have to go back and work on something else. There's some other driver that's dominating the gait problem at that point. You know, we talk about a kinetic chain. Everything is obviously linked, right down to the big toe. You know, you were talking about everting and somebody on their toe off. It's going to put an undue amount of pressure on their foot. Until we get a more symmetrical pattern, they're going to continue to have those painful episodes. You know, you talk about computers, garbage in, garbage out. Well, it's quite obvious for you and I when we look at somebody, oh, well, I'll just strap this or that, and then it will come around. I can remember a young gentleman, I think 9 years old, who'd been a toe walker his whole life, and just 5 minutes of putting the straps on, this kid was running across the floor, and his parents were just crying. I mean, everybody was pretty touched by how quickly things can change. And I mentioned working with paraplegics. We had two patients that we were working with that were classified Asia A, meaning their spinal cords had been completely severed. There was no possible way for them to move. But the combination of the unweighting, the strapping, the vibration was able to dramatically change their lives in ways that never could be done any other way that I'm aware of. But anyhow, getting back to runners and the athletes that we deal with, it's that much easier when you have people that will listen and affect change just by those verbal cues. And if that's not enough, then we have all of these other tools that we can go to, the thigh straps, the foot straps, and there's any number of ways to use those straps to correct whether somebody's overstriding or they're not moving enough. Hopefully the verbal cues are the change that they need right there, but if we need something else, there's always something in the toolbox that will bring them along. And I know, having looked at some of your other videos, I don't know if you've had a chance to ever look at any of the videos I put up, but with athletes, it's absolutely amazing to see what happens with their sprinting speed and their ability to stop and start. Being able to move side to side and backwards on the treadmill allows us to move in more functional movement patterns than any other way that I'm aware of. And right. unless you can remove gravity to take some of that kinetic load off, to take some of that poor neuromuscular input in, I don't think you're ever going to find a way that can correct as quickly and permanently as the combination of unweighting and strapping.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, I can't help but bring it up. I was, while you were saying that, I was thinking about the Ultra G. And for those of you that are not familiar with an Ultra G, it's basically, it's not necessarily, I guess it would be categorized as an unweighting system, but you're basically inside of a bag that is blown up while you're on the treadmill, and it reduces some of your load as you're moving. And it's highly regarded in the running industry as a way to bring back athletes that are recovering. But you can't turn in it. And you can't have any influence over the way they're moving while they're in it as well, because you virtually sew yourself into the bag. You have to wear a pair of shorts and you zip yourself into the bag. And really the only benefit that arises there is that it's going to take some of the load off of you. But with the system that we use, we're able to physically get involved with the people as they move, and then we can move them in 360 degrees. So, you know, as you suggested, you know, having like the power athletes, we have them do lateral drills, retro running, I call it, where they're running backwards, sideways. Mm-hmm. Talk about getting the glutes to fire and the lateral stabilizers, the hips to fire. This is a very, very powerful tool for that. And dramatic outcomes in a very, very short period of time. As a matter of fact, when I work with power athletes like that, I make a deal with them where we only ask them to commit to 8 sessions. And my goal is to make dramatic changes in their speed and agility in a matter of 8 sessions. And it's not because of what we're doing from a contractile perspective. We're not doing anything to encourage more muscle or more physical strength to do the work. We're just waking them up neurologically. We're starting to fire muscles that they weren't using before. And through that, I use the analogy of, you know, if I sold you a car, it was your first car, and it's a V8, and only 6 of the cylinders are firing because I've taken a couple of the spark plug wires off, it sputter, it kicks, and it gets you down the road, but you don't know any better. And then all of a sudden, I come up and say, well, wait a minute, and I plug in these other 2 spark plugs, and the thing takes off, and it's smooth, and it's running very nicely. Well, you know, when you have this, what I call sensory motor amnesia, when your muscles aren't firing and you don't have the support system that you actually were provided with to begin with, you're never going to be capable of producing 100%. So I guess that's part of the gift we give, is being able to bring that back. But we're kind of getting off point, though. I didn't really want to get off into the high speed and that kind of stuff yet. I want to talk more about the people that are just saying, well, Richard, you're talking about a lot of stuff here. Can I change the way I move? And is it a good idea? And so I just kind of want to take it back to some real basic concepts and basic thoughts. So we've already kind of alluded to the fact that running on your heels is bad juju. It's a bad idea. Just the kinematics and the physics of it are that you're just not doing yourself any favors. And I don't care who you are. This is my position. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I don't care who you are or what level of running you are today. If you change the way you move, where you're getting off your heels and you're starting to gain the eccentric energy from the ground because you're facilitating your calf and Achilles, and you put yourself in a posture that is moving forward more than leaning back, you're going to run better, and you're going to have a much greater potential all the way around. That's my take. What's your thought?
No, I agree wholeheartedly. We've been teaching that basically the entire time that I've been working in performance enhancement. Just the mechanics from me tell me that it's going to induce more torque to your pelvis if you're heel striking. There are a number of studies that show no, that's not the case. There's a number of studies recently that show that high-level athletes are not doing what they think they're doing, and they use video and they use coaches to go back and go, look, here's what's really happening. So, again, I couldn't agree more. The more efficient you are, the less likely you are to experience pain. When you look at high level athletes in any sport, the one thing that everybody says, oh, they make it look so easy. Well, I hope so. You know, otherwise they're not being efficient. And I think that's what it comes down to when we're making these verbal cues or using the gait straps to affect change. And don't get me wrong, they are great tools. Once somebody has a little bit of training, they can take those home and use them, and that's their homework. But the simple things can make a difference, right down to how you tie your shoes. I mean, there's just little things you can do that are going to make a difference. They're going to help your shoes fit better. You talked about bike fitting and you know, the differences that you can make there. Everything you do is about trying to make somebody more efficient, whether it's their posture, which is a big part of what I do, just the verbal cue that maybe their toes are turned out too much and they need to bring them in a little bit. And then there's the difference between knowing, well, wait a minute, you know, is there some genetic predisposition in their hips that's not going to let them turn their feet in, and that's what they have to do? So how do we accommodate them as best we can and still work towards the most efficient position? And I think that's where everybody can agree. The researchers can go out and claim that they've found the, you know, the new greatest fad, and that's going to be the best thing for you. But you know, it all comes back to, are you running without pain? Are you running in a manner that's enjoyable? And are you improving, if that's your goal? Some people want to go out just to run. You know, that there are many people out there that don't have that luxury right now. And whether it's pain or some physical deformity that needs to be overcome, if there's a way we can do that, then that's what we want to do.
Right. Well, so breaking it down to real simple concepts here. There are people out there, and you know, just forgive me downplaying this whole process, but there are people out there that run funny. They know mm-hmm. they run funny. And what I mean by run funny is that, you know, their legs are all over the place, their arms are all over the place, but they're getting it done. And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you know, I used to hate when a guy would run by me. I mean, meaning he's passing me and he's just... he's all over the place, you know. He's looking like, he looks like he's drunk or something, but he's beating me, right? And yeah. So you take a guy like that, and he's like, you know what? I'm good with this. I've been doing this all my life. Yeah, I look a little funny, but you know, it's just kind of my trademark. It's what I do. It's okay. But you know, when it's a function of kinematics. I mean, the joints are designed with a particular path intended. I don't know if that's an appropriate thing to say, but I mean, we are, the way our bodies align and the way we are generally designed to function can get disrupted. Something along the way, something in the course of our lives disrupts our natural patterns of movement, and then it becomes habit. And then we end up teaching ourselves to move this way. So my theory is if you could teach yourself to move funny, you could teach yourself to move better. Because in my experience, you started getting off into the potential for genetic abnormalities. I rarely see that. It's a very rare occasion where I find someone that is just got something going on that is just, you know, as you suggested, we do the best we can to try to help them be in the best path they could be in. But that's an uncommon scenario. It's like, for example, bone deformity. I mean, where there's, you know, they're really, really bow-legged or something like this. Mm-hmm. That's a 1 in 100 thing with me. I don't see a lot of that at all. And I never, personally, I never promise someone that we're going to change all that when I know in fact that it's just not going to change. I generally tell people right up front, say, look, you visit me, I get a look at you. If I don't think I can change it, I'm going to tell you I don't think I can change it. I'm not going to get into your wallet and just, you know, waste your life and your time coming to see me, hoping that, you know, I'm going to make a living and you're not going to get in a better place. So I never do that. But my point is this, is that it is valuable to make change, because the funnier you run, you know, just getting back to this broad, simple concept, the funner you run, the greater potential you're going to have to hurt yourself And it becomes, again, a function of how much you expose yourself to the work you're doing. So for some people, it may be 20 miles a week. Some people, it might be 50 miles a week. And some people might just be very, very dense in respect to their ability to take on pain, or structurally they're very, very solid and they get away with more than others. And some people, they break down very quickly. But my point is this: if you make some subtle corrections to the way you move, you can, in fact, get more out of your efforts. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I had several thoughts come to mind about my personal life. I was a lifeguard for years, and when I was in college, I had some people who knew that, and they said, oh, well, come swim with us in intramurals. So I thought I'd get in the pool and put in some laps and kind of work on things. And I'm swimming down the lane, and a guy on a kickboard was passing me. So, you know, it was certainly an area where I could have used a coach, and I didn't have that opportunity. You know, when we look at the gait straps and how we can make minor corrections if verbal cues haven't quite gotten there, I grew up skiing. That's my sport. And I had never had a proper boot fitting until I was 36 years old. And I skied in a recreational league and a race league and went up that night. And it was everything I could do to stay ahead of my skis. I had the best run of my life ever. And it was just such an eye-opener. I'd never really been a fan of orthotics or hadn't given much thought to that. And it's embarrassing to admit as a physical therapist that I hadn't had that done earlier. But then again, I went to a coach. I had somebody assess me, do a good assessment, and make some minor corrections. And they really were minor. But I'd had ACL surgery. I'd had some other problems. So I had some asymmetries. I had some things that I was still working on correcting. And that really kind of opened my eyes to how powerful some of the things we do with our feet and our positioning and our symmetries can be. And that was, it wasn't like the turning point for me, but boy, it sure did drive it home.
Yeah, well, I could tell you that, again, as I suggested in the very early part of this show, I've gotten away from getting heavy on people where, you know, we get them on the unweighted system and start strapping them and things like this. Mm-hmm. In a lot of times, that to me is like being a veterinarian. You know, you bring your pet to the veterinarian. The vet doesn't start asking the dog questions about what hurts and what doesn't hurt. He just starts influencing whatever it is that he needs to influence in order to make change. And that to me is kind of like what happens when I get people in the harness, because I'm no longer involved in trying to verbally cue them. I've physically taken over the way they move and basically jig them up to cause their bodies to respond dynamically. And then the musculature and the ligaments and tendons start heaving too, and the central nervous system starts to learn these new patterns, and then we basically affected change without having to verbally cue them. Now, in cases where people have some, you know, huge abnormalities in the way they move, and it's been patterned over a great length of their life, you can't verbally cue them to stop doing that. It's just not going to work. So you know what I'm talking about. You have to intervene. You have to make changes, and it becomes no longer a function of coaching. It's more a function of restructuring. You're changing the way they move, and it's interesting. I'll have clients where, and I'm sure you've done this yourself, where you get them in to the harness and you get them strapped up, and you have them move for a little bit. It's not quite what you were hoping for, and then you stop them, and then you adjust the straps, and then you put them back in, and they move a little bit longer. And you know, and I spend my time with them sitting in a chair, watching them on the treadmill. And then, you know, every now and then, you know, a strap loosens up and I adjust it and I tighten it up. But once I get them into a place where everything is doing what I want it to do, we no longer talk about gait. We talk about, you know, the new girlfriend and how mm-hmm. are you doing in school. And, you know, we're just having social banter, because every move they make, and you suggested every time you make contact with the ground, you're setting down patterns. And you're mm-hmm. setting down input, and it no longer becomes a function of being conscious of it. It's an unconscious manipulation we're creating for them so they don't have to think about it. But that's a very, very powerful thing to be able to do in the absence of being able to just essentially verbally cue them. So I get essentially two types of clients, some that just need education and some that need intervention, and you know, some that maybe need a little bit of both. But it is a very cool tool to be able to reach out and do that. And that's kind of why I reached out to you. You know, you made a comment to me about my treadmill. Oh yeah, I've got one of those too. And I thought, well, that's unusual. And that's what caused me to seek you out, because yeah, I don't know anybody that has a treadmill like mine, but you. I mean, because there's just a handful of those in the U.S., I believe, right?
There are very few, and that particular treadmill, having been imported from Germany, you're just not going to find them anymore. The cost is so prohibitive, but it is easily my favorite. It's kind of the big gun, as you were alluding to. I fully agree with verbal cues and sometimes just the gait straps. And again, I'll send patients home with those with little homework to wear them for a half hour in the morning, a half hour at night, and then extend that. But you know, the other end of the spectrum, if I have somebody who's just massive and they've locked in those patterns, then we're going to call out the big guns and I'm going to put every strap I need on there to get a good correction. If it's just somebody who's had that pattern, one of my favorite things to do, whether they're a cyclist or a runner, is to put them out there to their limits. You know, if they're going to go run a 10K, I want them to go run 9 and then come back and let me look at them. If they're a cyclist, I want them to do 50 miles and then I'm going to look at them, because then I'm going to get a true indication of where they are. And that's one of the beauties of the unweighting. By unloading and taking some pressure off the body, we're going to, you know, they talk about layers of an onion. You peel off the layers. They're going to expose different weaknesses with a different amount of unweighting at each level. And it's not always necessary. We don't need to shout at the body to get a response. The verbal cue, especially if it's the right one and it's timed appropriately, in my opinion, is always the best thing to do. You want to put in as little input as you need to get maximum output. But if right. you've seen over and over and over, whether it's a high-level athlete doing some of those other things, and you know, that's out there, as you well know. I've seen some of your videos with some of your kids. I can't believe you're not just bursting with high school football players down there or track stars, because it's so easy to make them better. But
it's really interesting that you bring that up, because I think that a lot of the resistance I get comes from the coaches, because they don't understand what I do, but they fear it. And I've gotten a lot of yardage with cross country runners where I have a kid as a client, and generally they come to me because they're hurt. And, you know, they've exhausted every other avenue. You know, they've gone to a traditional system of physical therapy. And, you know, the therapist does his job. He gets them out of the pain episode. And in a lot of cases, that, you know, that's his role. But he doesn't go, you're an exception. In a lot of cases, these therapists don't go through the process of re-educating the way they're moving, which is going to contend with the culprit as opposed to the outcome. And so they get hurt again. And, you know, and then it gets to a place where it manifests into such a severe injury that it requires some surgical intervention, possibly knee issues or what have you. But anyway, I've had kids come to me where by changing the way they move, all the issues that they were facing go away. They go away. I mean, you know, for example, shin splints, knee pain, hip pain. And I've had cases where physicians have told these kids, or the parents of the kids, they can't run anymore because they're developing arthritis in the knees, and it's just, they should take up a different sport or maybe swim or something like this. And then in a matter of a week, I've got the kid running pain-free and running better than the kids that they're competing with. And it gets to be a situation where, because traditionally in school, the kids don't know how to run. The cream rises to the top simply because maybe they were genetically inclined. They just had a great sense of ability to run, be it a function of VO2 score, be it a function of just naturally gifted runner, if there is such a thing. Those are the guys that are killing it. But everybody else, like them, still doesn't know how to run. So we change the way they move, improve the way they move, and I'll go out and you'll see 20 kids on the track. You could pick out the kids I worked with. Mm-hmm. The coaches can pick out the kids I worked with because they notice, how smoothly they're moving and how quickly they're improving. And so I've had a couple scenarios where the coach has reached out to me and said, look, would you come work with my kids and work with me? Show me how to do what it is you're doing so that I can get out of my kids what you're getting out of those few clients. But it's different with football. I don't know whether it's the fact that in football is kind of a macho sport. And, a lot of these football coaches, they came from being a football player themselves, and they're really old school. They come up and they're doing what their coach taught them and what their coach mm-hmm. taught them, what their coach taught them. So they're not really in the new millennium with their thinking processes. They're just out there, on the gridiron. They're harder, heavier, beat it down, scream at them, run, but not changing mechanics. And, I've had occasion, I've worked with some football players where, we made some significant differences in the way they move, and obviously enough speed, the ability to produce explosive speed in very, very mm-hmm. brief amounts of time. It's not an uncommon scenario where I'll get a guy and I'll put him in the harness on the treadmill and I'll drop him into about 15 miles an hour and that's all they could sustain. I mean, he's taxed. He's in a big problem at 15 miles per hour. Yeah. And then within a matter of 3 weeks, I've got the guy doing repeats and doing 10, 15 second repeats at 22, 23 miles per hour. Yeah. And what I'm talking about, right? I'm sure you've seen much quicker than that.
Well, yeah, there was a big thing last year. There was a receiver for the Cardinals who had a video clip and he got millions and millions of hits because he did 25 miles an hour. And I was laughing. I mean, I have kids in high school doing that. All of my athletes will get up to 28 at some point. And, your treadmill's wrong. And no, it's a German treadmill. It's pretty highly calibrated. I mean, I've got a quarterback playing in a state championship game tonight. And this kid is 6'5 and runs an electronic 4.58. He's got better numbers than anybody taking the NFL draft last year. I think two guys outjumped him on his vertical. But, I mean, he's a senior in high school and they're graduating from college,
Right.
So, it's just fun to see how quickly, you can make these changes. And it doesn't matter if it's an athlete or a runner or a high level runner. I get some pushback from some of the track coaches because they're, for whatever reason, but running is one of the easiest things to correct. And when you're working on a sport that doesn't have as many variables, when you can make somebody highly efficient in a very short period of time, I don't know if it's the coach is still threatened or how that works. I mean, I had, because you brought it up earlier, I had an athlete that was at the U.S. Olympic Training Center, and she was captain of the U.S. javelin team at the time. And she had used the AlterG to rehab a tibial plateau fracture. And she liked it for that because it could do great things, but she also knew the difference between the two. And, obviously in my mind, we have a better solution, but, the right tool at the right time, I guess, is what I'm getting to. And just being able to do these things so quickly, it's frustrating when you want to help more people and you don't quite have the reach to get to everybody. So, I look forward to maybe coming on your show at a later date. We can get into some more specific things with these if that's something that your listeners want to hear.
Well, I think that there's call for it. I mean, I have, last week we did an interview with Hunter McIntyre, who him and his team just won the world's toughest mudder. which is just an imposing event. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's 24 hours on a 5-mile course with 25 obstacles. And, you know, whoever can cover the most distance in that 24 hours wins. And him and his team, the interesting thing about a team dynamic is that you've got to win as a team. You can't get any further apart from one another than about 12 meters, I think it is. You have to stay as a unit. So if you're feeling like you got to go, you can't. Or if you're dragging, you got to get it up. But they covered like 76 miles over the course of this 24 hours. And so Hunter is, and actually he's the point leader in the Spartan championships this year. And he's come to me, and that's actually how I found him, is he contacted me because he realizes that in order to you know, maintain his position and potentially win the world championships next year, he's got to focus on his running. Because, you know, he's a big guy, he weighs 195 pounds, and the guys he's competing with are, you know, 140 pound whippets that can run, you know, 215, 216 marathons. And though he can muscle through the obstacles, when it comes time to run, and, you know, the world championships are over a 13 mile course. So, you know, you got to do a lot of running. So he's got a hold of me so we can work on his speed. And mind you, he's fast. You know, he runs, you know, for a guy that big, he runs 4:30 mile, you know, wow. And, which is pretty, it's pretty astounding for a guy that weighs 195 pounds. But that's what we're going to do. We're going to take him to the dark side. We're going to get in and start working on his explosive speed and see if we can bring his game up a little bit. So, you know, across the board, we have a variety of people that listen to the show, and most of them are running in some fashion or another, whether it be to run a mile or as a segment of a triathlon, or, you know, in a Tough Mudder or a Spartan race, or, you know, trying to run across the U.S. You know, running mechanics is a very important component of all of this. And the more we can shed light on the importance of doing it properly, I think we're doing people a service.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I just keep going back to the fact that the more symmetry you can create in your stride, the better off you're going to be. My favorite cue was to have people keep their toe on the treadmill, because that's where a lot of our work is done, as long as possible. And just that small little change can affect, if it's the right cue at the right time, can affect a dramatic difference in somebody's race by lengthening their stride just a little bit. And with every stride being an eighth of an inch longer, whatever it is, you know, over the course of 24 hours, that might get them another half mile, a mile, whatever. And even in a shorter race, a guy at 195 running a 4:30 mile, that's pretty awesome. There's no doubt in my mind why he's a current champion. And I look forward to seeing how he does with some minor corrections from you. You know, when you get an athlete that good and make them better, I think that's one of the true tests of what you can do. Anybody can take somebody who's, you know, a good athlete, and then you just remove a couple of the problems and they become a great athlete. And then what can you do to make somebody stand out that much more? And I think the one thing I take the most pride in is the low injury rate in my athletes. And in most of the sports, especially if you're talking about high school athletes, they're trying to get a college scholarship. You know, they want to go on to the next level. And people most often just aren't realistic. It's such a small percentage of people that make it. And then when you get to the professional level, for them to stay at that level, you know, you look at the average time of, say, a professional hockey player or a professional football player, you know, it's a short window of time they have to make money. And it's amazing to me that some of those communities haven't caught on to some of these ideas a little bit more in order to basically, you know, protect their investment, if nothing else. So.
Yeah, well, I'm going to hook you up with these guys at MedHab. I'll connect you with them, because I think that it's absolutely a tool that you must have. And,
absolutely.
You know, they're partnered, by the way, they're partnered with Michael Johnson. a world record for 400 meters. And, you know, he was the fastest man in the world for the great deal of time until finally Usain Bolt beat him in the 200 by just fractions of a second. So it's going to be interesting to hear from him. And he's very much involved in this new system of training. So listen, we're getting ready to wrap this up. I'd like people to know how to find you, Peter. Tell them where you're at and tell them how to find you.
Well, I'm in Boise, Idaho. The name of my business is Win Sports Lab. And then the physical therapy side is Helix, H-E-A-L-X, physical therapy. They can find me on Facebook. My website is not up right now on Win. We'll be getting that up shortly. Helix PT, HELXPT.com. They can go there. And if they'd like to send me an email, there's a link off my website or just through Facebook. They can message me, or if they want to get a hold of you, and we can go from there. There's tons more things I'd like to talk about. I believe Michael Johnson was helped out by a mutual friend of ours and a piece of equipment where he'd strained his hamstring, and he went out and ran the world record within 10 minutes of doing some stretching type work. And so all of these products you have on this week, I guarantee you I'll be calling in, because I'm just as interested as your listeners as to what else can be done. And I appreciate the time here today. It's always nice to hear from people in the field that are searching for new ways, more efficient ways to make their athletes better. And again, I just really appreciate the time to reach out to you and any of your listeners. I'd be happy to hear from
them. Right. Well, Peter, listen, it was good having you. Listen, have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network. Drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.